Hey, deserving listeners, it's time to continue watching the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial. Let's watch.
And finally, she went back to her apartment, and then she wanted me to go back and pack her bag for her at about 10 o'clock at night on Sunday, and I said I couldn't go. By that point, I'd already spent the whole day sitting there, so I said I couldn't go and pack her bag because I'd already put my son to bed, and she was very angry about that.
This is day three of the trial, and they are interviewing Amber Heard's previous personal assistant. It's an interesting deposition because she doesn't seem to want to be there to answer any of these questions and has been kind of sarcastic at times, and she's clearly annoyed with a number of the questions. Sometimes they are roped into this sort of thing, and they would rather not do it, and I've been there before. She also mentioned that with Amber Heard, she was being paid $25 an hour, which she considered to be not enough for what she was required to do. She seems to have a very sour memory of working with Amber Heard. She's talking about having to wait around with her son. She has to wait around while Amber Heard parties and drinks by the pool. She seems quite annoyed with it. If this is a glimpse into the life of personal assistants, yeah, you need to pay him more money for that. If it's one thing I don't like about certain aspects of job, it's boredom. I mean, you cannot pay me enough money to just sit there and wait for something to happen. I've had gigs like that before, and every time I'm like, I don't care how much they're paying me. I don't want to ever do this again. Pay me a quarter of the amount and just give me something to do. And I was a security guard in college, which literally meant just sitting there. This is before cell phones, and I couldn't afford a laptop back then. You just sat there and stared at a wall. But, you know, I would invite my friends over because I was a late night guard, and so we would hang out. Anyway, the personal assistant's complaining about her work with Amber and seems to be indicating that Amber Heard had a lot of drama, that when Amber Heard might complain about Johnny Depp, because at that time, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard were in a relationship, and the assistant is saying, oh, well, you know, I probably didn't regard it because Amber Heard was always dramatic. That's what she's saying. So let's hear some more.
So when you asked her if she was okay, you didn't actually care if she was okay. You said you were just placating her, right?
It was a standard procedure at this point. She was a very dramatic person.
Right, you hear that? Standard procedure. I was saying, are you okay? Not because I cared, but it was just a routine that was my job, and she was a very dramatic person, and so I didn't take her emotions seriously or her stories or indications of some kind of horrible incident that she'd been through seriously. That someone close to her would say something like that, right? I mean, who knows? Maybe she's biased because she didn't get paid enough.
Would you put that on Ms. Heard's tab that day?
Everything was on Depp's tab that day, so no.
On Johnny's tab?
Yes.
When she wrote, I love you, and you wrote, love you too, hon, won't be long, X, was that just placating Ms. Heard?
Standard friendly text exchange in my role of work.
Were you trying to be supportive at all, or just placating her?
A bit of both, I guess.
Did you have any concern whatsoever about Ms. Heard's well-being that day?
No.
When was the first time you remember Ms. Heard telling you that all wasn't right in the relationship between her and Mr. Depp?
I don't recall exactly when it started, but it was usually her complaining and crying due to, I would say, insecurities within the relationship more than anything else. She would be very, very insecure a lot of the time.
All right, we're hearing from the past personal assistant in, I believe, the beginning of the relationship with Johnny Depp. Amber Heard would tell her personal assistant in private, she would complain about Johnny Depp, and the personal assistant is saying it was very routine, it happened all the time, and I didn't really take it seriously because it was very dramatic, and she's very insecure. So most of her complaining about Johnny Depp wasn't that she was afraid of abuse or anything, but was her worried about insecurities. So I don't know about Amber Heard. I don't know if this testimony is truthful or spun in a certain way, but I can talk about borderline histrionic individuals. I've treated many of them. I don't know if Amber Heard is one of those individuals, but insecurity is something that these individuals struggle with. From my previous discussions about borderline / histrionic, it would seem obvious, but I haven't spoken explicitly about insecurities. Insecurities, we don't really know what the personal assistant was referring to when she says insecurities, but for a lot of us, insecurities are Does he love me? How do I look? Is he going to leave me? Am I a good enough person? Do people see how insecure I am? Those kinds of insecurities, right? All of us have those, by the way, but borderline histrionic people have it times 10. Because of what they went through when they were young, they were shown that they don't matter, that at any moment they could be rejected. At any moment, someone could criticize you and abandon you or leave you or abuse you. When they were 2 years old and they were abandoned or abused, the amount of powerlessness and pain that they went through was astronomical. For all of us, though, growing up, we all have problems. We all are slightly bullied at school or made fun of, or we humiliate ourselves and we retain those experiences and we try to avoid those as adults. But if everything went relatively well, we're only kind of insecure. And I would say baseline, just because I feel like I need to normalize this, the descriptions of insecurity, the typical insecurities that people will describe, I would say everyone has that, even people that you would think would never have that. The older I get and the more clients I work with and the more people I talk to, the more I realize that baseline, everyone is insecure. Everyone is unsure about themselves. Everyone doesn't know what they're doing half the time. You know, like when I was a kid or even in my 20s, I saw like older adults and they just seemed like they had everything figured out, like they always knew what was going on. A part of the reason why I actually discovered this was because once I became a professor and a supervisor and a seasoned therapist and educator, and I worked really hard at that job and tried to be as competent as possible, I really dedicated myself to my career, and I still felt profoundly insecure. And if a student were to criticize me, it would destroy my mood. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Sometimes when people leave negative comments to me on YouTube, it ruins my week. I don't think that I'm more insecure than other people. Now, not everyone react that way. I talk to other content providers and they're just like, yeah, I don't know, I blow it up. But they're insecure about something else is the point. I feel like I want to say that because I feel like a lot of people out there think I'm an insecure person when they're just more in touch with it or more able to discuss it. Now, people with borderline histrionic are much more insecure and much more worried about all those things because of what they went through. So maybe that's what the assistant was observing.
And she would call me up crying. I remember one time she called me when she was alone in New York City and she was crying, walking around the street, crying. And he wasn't there. She was alone. But I said to her that she needed to go inside because I was worried that the paparazzi might take a photo of her. And she was in a very dysregulated state. And so just out of kindness, I said to her it was better if she went inside rather than walking around crying in public. I remember that, but I don't remember exactly when that was. It might have been 2012 or 2013.
So she's telling a story. Amber Heard was upset walking around crying and was dysregulated, meaning I think extremely upset and crying. I will say that as I hear these stories, regardless of what happened in this case, it makes me feel really bad for Amber Heard, honestly. I work with a lot of people like this, and they often are very caring, very loving people deep down, but they're so easily triggered that it's really hard for them to get through the day. I mean, when I work with people with significant borderline or histrionic, it's a tough life.
Did you ever believe that Mr. mistreated her?
No.
That's notable. Now, she wasn't there, but according to her, she's saying, I do not believe that Johnny Depp ever hurt her or mistreated her in any way. She could have answered the question, well, I don't know. I wasn't there, because she was very quick to answer in that way. When she was asked a question that she doesn't remember, she's like, I don't remember. Like they asked, you know, when was the last time you talked to Amber Heard? I don't know. Can you estimate? No, I have no idea.
Did you ever believe that Mr. mistreated her?
No.
Did Miss Heard ever tell you that Johnny had hit her?
No.
Did she ever tell you that Johnny had pulled her hair or pushed her?
No.
If they had a professional relationship, we might think, well, you know, Amber Heard wouldn't reveal everything about their relationship, but we hear stories to the contrast that for Amber Heard, in a panic and crying, she called her personal assistant. There were lots of stories and lots of complaining and lots of insecurity. Someone that Amber Heard believed was listening to her and there for her. It sounds like the personal assistant, at least on the inside, didn't really care. I mean, I think she literally even said that and she was just doing her job. But anyway, Amber Heard saw her as that. And you would think that if Johnny Depp had been abusive to her during those those years than Amber Heard would have told her personal assistant. But maybe not. I don't know.
No, never. And there was never any damage to the apartment that I witnessed. There was never any aftermath of anything ever that I ever saw.
Now, you, of course, have no personal knowledge one way or the other whether Johnny was abusive to her, correct?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, because if it was true, I would have seen the damage, even if I wasn't physically present in the moment of these alleged arguments.
All right, that's another good point, that she's saying, if something happened when I wasn't around, I would have seen the damage. You know, not necessarily, obviously, but that is possible. She's saying, I would have seen something broken because I was there so often, or I would have seen a wound on her face, something like that. It's more data. Again, it doesn't eliminate the possibility of abuse happening, but, you know, given the way the personal assistant is describing their relationship, it sounds very unusual that Amber Heard would go through something like that, and while complaining to the personal assistant about everything else about Johnny Depp, would not reveal that. But I know absolutely there are people who are going through abusive relationships who will actually draw a line. I'll have clients like that. In fact, I've had many clients who will sit down on my couch and tell me about their life and their relationship, and we might be in therapy for a couple years where they're painting a picture of their relationship with their spouse in a way that, you know, there's conflict and we're working on it. And maybe I'm starting to think, well, you know, I think your partner is a little domineering, a little unreasonable at times, a little bit of a temper, but certainly not abusive, because I don't hear any indication of that. And then 2 years later, they tell me, or something comes out, or I don't know, I discover that that is happening. And the client will tell me, and this is just a hypothetical, they'll tell me that they were worried that I was going to call the cops, or I was going to judge them. That's actually a very frequent thing. Or that I'll pressure them to leave the relationship, and they just decided to leave that out. Shame, you know, all those things. So could Amber Heard have been coming from a place like that with her personal assistant? Sure. We don't know.
Is your testimony that never saw firsthand evidence of Johnny being violent to Amber, that it couldn't have happened?
That's not what I said. You're trying to put words into my mouth. I don't appreciate that.
Can you pull up the document that is, let me see what it ends with here. It's the doc, DEP 11432, please.
Okay, so they're showing a text from August of 2016. I think it's from Johnny, I'm not sure. It says, "Thank you, sweetheart. I'm disgusted that I ever effing touched that scum. Back on Tuesday, and then court will hit you when I get back, doll. Come over for a spot of purple and we'll fix her flabby ass nice and good. Loveth, Jay." I don't know who that's from, so maybe we'll get some context here.
That was about Miss Heard, was it not? And on line 14, you answered, yes, yes. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay, so the text was actually to her from Johnny Depp, saying that he wanted to have a drink with her, and then they did meet up, and according to her, they did not have a drink, but we don't know what happened at that meeting. And it is an interesting text. Something about hitting Amber, I believe, and insulting Amber.
Just trying to be agreeable in the court, having no clue what on earth is going on. So there you go. I have no clue.
We're also learning that there was a previous hearing about these texts and her relationship with Amber Heard, and maybe in relation to Johnny Depp, I think in the UK. So maybe there was some sort of charge or something. I don't know.
Just when Miss Heard was in fittings, that you would see her in states of undress?
No, it was also in her apartment. She had no issue with walking around naked quite often.
Did you ever observe Miss Heard putting on makeup?
Yes.
How often did you see Miss Heard doing her makeup?
Just when she was getting ready to go out somewhere for a party or something.
Did it appear to you that she was
wearing? She usually never wore makeup unless she was going to a special event.
All right, so they're asking the personal assistant, how often did she see Amber Heard naked and dressing and putting on makeup, and how often did she wear makeup? And the assistant is saying that she frequently saw Amber changing and naked, and that she didn't typically wear makeup.
Miss Heard, did you ever see any types of injuries on her?
No.
Right, so they ask explicitly, you saw her naked, or at least while getting dressed, and did you see any sign of injury? And she says no.
Did you ever see any cuts?
No.
Did you see bruises?
No.
Did you see swelling?
No.
redness in her face?
No.
How about Ms. Heard having black eyes?
Never.
A broken nose?
Never.
Missing hair clumps? Sorry, I didn't catch that. Ms. Never. James?
Never.
Now, they're asking some very specific questions. I don't know if it's just general signs of abuse or these are allegations from Amber Heard of that time, but the interviewer mentioned broken nose, black eyes, that kind of thing. I wonder if we'll find out later that that is the claim by Amber Heard.
Did you ever see Ms. Heard cry?
Yes.
How often did you see her cry?
Hard to put a number on it. Sometimes she would cry on the phone. I think at least once or twice she might have cried on the phone, you know, and then as far as seeing her personally crying, you know, she was a pretty dramatic person. It's hard to really put a number on it.
Again, back to she's a very dramatic person. There were a number of occasions where I witnessed her crying.
How many times do you believe that you saw her in person crying?
I would say twice, maybe twice.
So that isn't what I would have thought she said, given her description earlier of the frequent dramatic displays. She says she heard her crying on the phone about twice and saw her in person crying about twice. So that paints a different picture. And I wonder if this individual, the personal assistant, has a very low bar for defining drama, if you will. And honestly, given the way that she's responding to questions and her demeanor, she's an interesting character. It's like, I feel like I'm watching an SNL skit or something. I mean, if you ever have a chance to just watch this, she's very, I mean, cantankerous, I think, is a good word for it. And you know, I think rightfully so. As I was saying earlier, I've been in this situation before, and sometimes you just feel like, do I have to answer that question 5 times in a row? I don't know if that's an indication of her personality in general. You know, I could see someone being a lovely individual, but quite upset in this kind of circumstance. But she also said that she never really cared about Amber's feelings, and she was only saying nice things because it was part of her job. She's trying to placate her. Is that a general trait that she has, or is it just towards Amber because of the nature of their relationship? I didn't show these clips, but they went on a long exploration of how the woman, the personal assistant, was fired by Amber Heard, according, I think, to illuminate some sort of bias that she might have, the assistant. She said that Amber Heard told her that she was firing her because she needed to take care of her mom or something like that. And it was very abrupt to her. She apparently had 6 weeks severance, but for her, it was a hardship on her mortgage and this sort of thing. They also brought up the fact that she didn't pay her mortgage for a year and a half, which I don't know what that had to do with anything. So she said that she was upset about it. She didn't say she was that upset about it, but she, you know, she said it bothered her. So does that illuminate bias to the jury? I don't know.
Last time you saw Ms. Heard cry in person, do you recall what she was crying about?
Insecure emotions.
Okay. So they ask her, why was she crying? Why was Amber Heard crying? And she just has two words, insecure emotions. All right.
So the two times that you recall Ms. Heard crying in front of you, you remember her crying about being insecure. Is that correct?
I mean, we all imagine that this is going to be turned into a movie or an American crime story. What's that series that did the O.J. Simpson and the Monica Lewinsky? We can imagine that in 5 years this will be depicted, or even sooner. And I imagine that Kristen Wiig will play this character, or at least be asked to. I think Kristen Wiig would do an amazing job with it.
She felt insecure about her relationship. Is that correct?
Yes. He didn't like being away from his physical presence.
Did Ms. Heard tell you that she felt insecure when Mr. Depp wouldn't be present with her?
All right, so that's consistent with the profile of someone, at least on the borderline histrionic spectrum, that when Johnny Depp wasn't around, that she would display or even express to the personal assistant that she was insecure and sad and having a hard time with that separation.
She told me she didn't like hanging out in his house with his friends because it was boring and they were all old men playing guitars and it wasn't interesting to her.
Okay. I don't know. It's just a funny little detail. And Johnny Depp and the lawyer think it's... So Amber Heard would complain to the personal assistant that she didn't like hanging out at Johnny Depp's house because it was all just old men playing guitar. Sometimes I wonder if my wife would complain about that. Now, okay, so on one hand, you would say with Amber Heard that she just didn't like to do that, that maybe Johnny Depp and the friends were ignoring her or something. You can imagine that being true. It's just like you're the fifth wheel and you're not interested in doing anything that they're doing. You know, you could imagine that being boring. Or you could imagine someone on the borderline histrionic spectrum when they are needing to be close to someone and their attachment figure is right there, but not paying attention to them and maybe paying attention to other people, that could really trigger someone because that could be emulative of what it was like when they were growing up and no one was paying attention to them. Hey, deserving listeners, today's episode is sponsored by HelloFresh. When you sign up, use the code Seattle16. HelloFresh sends you easy-to-make meal kits delivered right to your door every week. Ingredients travel from farm to your doorstep in under a week, so they're always fresh, all without having to leave your house, which appeals to me because I hate running errands. Puts me in a bad mood, to be honest. HelloFresh is super flexible. You can skip weeks when you need to. You can pick your favorites from 50 different weekly options. In our house, we love all the recipes, but some of them that are really great are the citrus beef tacos, their barbecue sloppy joes, and their pizzas. You know, me and my pizzas. So go to HelloFresh.com/Seattle16. That's Seattle16. And use the code Seattle16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/Seattle16 and use the code Seattle16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. And remember that HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
What was your impression of Mr. Depp?
He was very peaceful, very calm, almost shy, and very quiet. And I remember he was wearing red suede shoes because I didn't know where else to look. I looked at his shoes. It's a weird recollection.
It's a whole other Ms. James before us. But anyway, so she's talking about the first time she met Johnny Depp, and she's saying that he was almost shy.
Did you ever witness Mr. Depp be rude to anyone?
He's such a gentleman. He's like a total Southern gentleman. So no.
Did you ever see Mr. Depp lose his cool?
No.
Did you ever see him scream at anyone?
No.
All right, it's Data. Does that mean that he was never abusive? Absolutely not. But according to her, and she was around a lot, he was a Southern gentleman. He was always kind. He never lost his temper. He never was rageful. He never got angry. He never yelled at anyone. So that's interesting. And of course, if it were the opposite, then that would paint a different picture, right, for the jury. Again, I just want to be clear. Some of you might out there be like this, where you were being abused or are being abused by someone, and they never show that side of them outside of you. And they're very careful about making sure that no one ever sees that side of them, and are even very good at doing the opposite around and making you look like you're the crazy one or something. But if someone doesn't show a temper, doesn't show any rage, doesn't show any violence, doesn't show any indication that they would be violent and that sort of thing, that does lend itself to an hypothesis that he never did. Now, I think his drug abuse, which I think was severe, might have fluctuated over time. And when people are intoxicated, they are capable of doing things that they wouldn't do normally. So I don't know. But it is interesting. You know, I don't know anything about Johnny Depp, the real Johnny Depp, or Amber Heard for that matter. But so we're getting a behind the scenes opinion.
Did you ever see him break something?
Only in a video.
In your presence, did you ever see Mr. Depp break something intentionally?
Never break anything, never throw anything, always completely passive.
And that's interesting too, always completely passive. She's using words like shy and a gentleman and passive. So it's not just that he wasn't rageful, it was almost like he was never abrasive.
Pick as well, a guitar pick, which he cherishes to this day as well.
All right, so the personal assistant was asked how Johnny Depp interacted with her son. Her son was 4 to 8 during that time. And according to her testimony, she's saying that Johnny Depp was very kind to her son, would play with him, would teach him guitar. And to this day, her son cherishes this guitar pick that Johnny Depp gave to him. So that's interesting. I mean, it adds to the picture, does it not? It's very sweet. And I don't know if I showed this as well, but the friend who was on the stand who saw Amber Heard shortly after the May 21st abuse allegation was asked what his relationship was like or how he felt about Johnny Depp. And the individual was crying on the stand, talking about how Johnny Depp had saved his life or completely changed his life, had given him hope for his own art and paid for his bills. And it was a very touching scene.
It did not seem like a perfect relationship to me, based on a lot of insecurity on her behalf, which seemed to cause confusion in the relationship. Maybe the age gap was an issue because of their interests. I know that much. Apart from that, who am I to know the relationship, you know?
Do you think that Mr. Depp was smothering of Ms. Heard?
Oh, yeah.
Did it appear to you that Mr. Depp was jealous of Ms. Heard?
No.
All right. She even admitted she didn't know what was really going on in the relationship. But according to her, she's saying that Johnny Depp didn't appear jealous of her.
Did you ever have interactions with Mr. Depp by yourself?
Sometimes, yeah. This friendly chit chat, which would stop immediately when Amber saw me speaking to him, she'd give me the evil eye and I'd know to just quickly walk away.
That's interesting. So they're asking, did you ever talk, alone with Johnny Depp? And she's saying if Amber Heard saw that, then Amber Heard would give her the evil eye and she would go, oh, I'm not supposed to do that. So I haven't talked explicitly about jealousy when it comes to people with borderline, but it's worth discussing now. And of course, jealousy is something that we're all capable of feeling. But for people with borderline, they feel it times 10. That the feeling that we get when we see our partner attracted to, or we see signs that they're attracted to someone, or we learn that they spent time with someone else, or maybe there were indications that they liked a previous partner more than us, or whatever it is. It's a little bit of hurt and fear. It's important to know this because a lot of people, I feel like, talk about jealousy like it's some kind of evil feeling when it's just a word we use to indicate the fear of losing our partner. And some jealous moments are completely ridiculous. They're completely irrational. Like, it wouldn't be uncommon for a particularly jealous person or insecure attached person to see them texting with someone and they don't even know who they're texting with. You see your partner texting with someone, you don't know who they're texting with, and immediately think, they're cheating on me. And you'll hear reports of people that will have that experience. And with a partner that's literally never cheated on you before, you will think that, even though in all likelihood, they're probably just texting with a friend or with work or God knows who, but there's that irrationality to it. And all of us have that capability, but the more attached, insecure you are, the more likely you're going to feel that way and the more likely you're going to misinterpret things. So there's the fear of losing someone in jealousy. And there's also the hurt of you are not respecting me, or you're not dedicated to me, or it seems like you don't care about my feelings. That's another element of jealousy. For you to text that person right in front of my face hurts my feelings because it's like you don't even care about who I am, or you've been lying to me about the fact that you loved me this whole time. So it's pain of that and fear of loss of the attachment. That's what jealousy is. That's we use the word jealousy to, in my model of emotions, describe that entire experience. And for people with abandonment traumas and betrayal traumas, of course, they're much more likely to feel that because they feel as though abandonment and betrayal is imminent. It is happening at any moment. And so the assumption in treatment, when I'm treating people with borderline, not always, but very frequently, especially once our relationship becomes more intense and it needs to be that way in order for corrective experiences to happen, that they will think that I am in a constant state of wanting to terminate with them. In fact, I've had borderline clients who pretty much every session, we might even talk about that for half the session, maybe the whole session, where I learn that they have that paranoia. And so I will ask them to talk about that so that I can demonstrate to them that it's not true, because getting into my head is actually helpful to them so that they can feel more secure and more worthy of secure attachment. And so I will say, maybe like within the first 5 minutes, I might say, so are you worried right now that I'm going to terminate with you? or that I harbor secret negative thoughts about you, that I just want to get rid of you, or that I think you're a piece of crap. They'll say something along those lines, like, yeah, I am worried that, like last week I was thinking about what you said, and then it started to build in my mind over the days that I thought for sure you're secretly trying to get rid of me. Or, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, I know that you're on YouTube and you have a career, and so surely you're going to just close your practice and you're going to get rid of me, right? It's because when they were young, they did go through that experience. And so they learned that abandonment is indeed around every corner. But they apply that to relationships outside of their family of origin and their childhood when it's not likely to be true. Now, of course, what will happen with people with borderline is, one, they will often choose people to date that show signs subconsciously to them that individual will abandon them. A classic example is dating someone that's already married, and you know they're already married, and you totally fall in love with them, not necessarily because you're in love with them, but because it gives you an opportunity to recreate what happened in the past, and thus sabotaging your own attachments. So not only will people choose, but they will also try to recreate it even if the other person isn't going to abandon you. An example in treatment, again, is that the client, because they're trying to really test me, or they're trying to force me into this easy displacement of what happened, you know, they're trying to transfer their parents onto me, whoever abandoned them when they were young, onto me. So they're trying to recreate that dynamic, essentially trying to subconsciously get me to abandon them. So they might be threatening to me, or they might be angry at me, or they might show up late to session, or something. You know, they'll do something to me subconsciously in an attempt to test whether or not I truly am dedicated to them, because they're in a constant state of worrying about that, or two, trying to get me to abandon them because they subconsciously are trying to recreate that. So as I said, unfortunately for people with borderline, they unconsciously will choose people or create situations such that jealousy is actually much more likely to happen, and abandonment is much more likely to happen. Some borderline people, again, not all, might be dominated by jealousy, because again, that's the word we use for the experience of fear of loss, which of course borderline individuals have times 10. They will be in a frequent state of jealousy. Their baseline is essentially a low buzz jealousy throughout the day. That can be very aggravating to a partner. That can be very hurtful, you know, be constantly accused. It can be aggravating. It can be like, I have to constantly reassure this person that I'm not leaving them. Or like, actually, for those of you who watched 90 Day Fiancé with me on YouTube, there was a character, Jasmine, who I don't know was borderline, of course, but she did have a possible sign that you would go down a hypothesis of borderline personality disorder, was when they were apart living in different countries, she required her partner, Gino, to walk around with his phone on video whenever he left the house, because she was his police officer, making sure that he didn't flirt with anyone. And so if he went to the store to get food or a restaurant to get takeout, he had to show who he was talking to. So, you know, that's high control. And so what will happen with this assumption of abandonment and terror of abandonment, then jealousy, then control, not everyone does this, and then high coercive, abusive relationship.
Did Amber ever talk to you about your interactions with Mr. Depp?
No.
In the 3 years that you worked for Ms. Heard, did you ever see Ms. Heard and Mr. Depp argue?
No.
Also notable, she never saw Johnny Depp and Amber Heard arguing even. But of course, they probably did argue behind closed doors, but she never saw it. All right.
In the 3 years that you worked for Ms. Heard, did you ever see any physical violence between Ms. Heard and Mr. Depp?
Never.
Did you ever see either of them being physically aggressive with one another?
No.
Okay, so now she's talking about both Amber and Johnny, that neither of them were aggressive physically with each other. So a possible scenario is that the beginning of the relationship was relatively peaceful, but then over time it got more volatile.
How she was verbally abusive to you?
Screaming over the phone. She screamed at me once in person, multiple times screaming at me over the phone. Barrages of abusive text messages. Day and night. A lot of them in the middle of the night, I think you're aware.
Okay, I think we have our answer as to why it seemed to me that Ms. James, the personal assistant of Amber Heard, doesn't like Amber Heard, because according to her, she was frequently verbally abused. and berated over the phone and in person, that is a big yikes and is notable, right? Now, does that mean that Amber Heard was guilty of defamation? No, but it certainly paints a picture, does it not?
Between 2 and 4 a.m., the barrage would start. That's what I'd wake up to. All incoherent, not really making sense, just basically someone to lash out at, you know, no apparent reason to it.
So, according to her, there's no reason. I'm guessing if Amber Heard were to respond, she would say, no, I hated that personal assistant because she da 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 da. But to berate someone.
You testified previously that you observed Ms. Heard be verbally abusive to her sister.
Yes.
What do you recall about that?
It was ongoing, kick the dog kind of relationship with her sister. So it's really hard to pinpoint any specifics. But
all right, she's saying that Amber Heard was abusive even to her sister.
Her poor sister was treated like the dog that you kick, basically.
Okay, so she's saying the sister is treated like the dog that you kick. That might be in the histrionic side of things. Again, I have no idea. They could all be lying. Or it is all true, but it has nothing to do with borderline or histrionic. So I'm just trying to educate the public on these issues so that you can get your own therapy for not only these conditions, but also if people are in your life like this and you can understand it better. And you can also raise your kids in a way so that they don't develop these kinds of things. With histrionic, they always develop it early in life, and they, throughout their childhood, might have a sibling that is getting some attention, maybe even less attention than them, but because they have this defense mechanism of, I must garner all the attention or else I'm unsafe and unlovable. If anyone else is getting attention, I must put an end to that. So who knows, but maybe the sister was that role for her. I don't know.
You observed Ms. Heard be verbally abusive to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
What specifically did you observe?
Well, there is a video that's online where you can see her being abusive first and foremost. So it's not even based on what I'm telling you. It's what I've seen, the interactions between the two of them when her mother was still alive and the fact that her mother was...
Okay, she's even saying that Amber Heard was verbally abusive to her own mother, which is interesting. And she's claiming that the video is public.
Terrified of her.
Did her mother tell you she was terrified of her?
She personally told me she was terrified of her.
Wow. I mean, I didn't expect to get such data from anyone. Amber Heard's mom, before she died, told her, the personal assistant, that she was terrified of Amber Heard. Wow. Who knows, but I have worked with families and parents, and when you have a borderline histrionic, a particularly high in the spectrum child, it can be rough. It can be really, really rough. Now, you might have contributed to the emotional landscape that contributed to the development of the personality disorder as a parent. I once had a family, and I'll change details to hide identity, of course. The narrative that seemed to have emerged from my investigation, and it wasn't like an investigation, it was, you know, just me assessing the family, was that the early experience of the child was during a time when the dad was working a lot and the mom was really sick and also might have been depressed. She wasn't sure. The mom was really trying to attend to the infant, but didn't have the energy and was resentful that she was doing it all by herself and would have to spend time in bed just to rest because of her health issues, and later became, you know, felt better and less depressed, and the father got more involved in the parenting, but the damage had been already done by the age of 3 years old, and that child was mostly okay and manageable. But once they became 13, 14, that's usually when the stuff hits the fan, and it became almost impossible to parent this child. The child was in a constant state of anger and rage at the parents and would abuse the parents. And I would treat families like this, would verbally abuse, would terrorize, would try to put the parents in a constant state of fear by moving stuff around in the middle of the night or making threats, running away, telling lies, saying, I'm going to call Child Protective Services on you. It's pretty awful. This is why it takes a village. if the aunts and the uncles and grandparents and cousins were around, then they could have made up for the deficit and attunement to that child. But because in the United States in particular, we always love to isolate ourselves in these nuclear family homes, it doesn't provide a safety net for the emotions of a child.
Did you ever witness Ms. Heard tongue lash her mother?
Here and there, yes. Especially when it was a build up to a stressful event or something like that, yeah.
Okay, so she's saying that, I think what she's saying is in the build up to a stressful event for Amber Heard, like a award show or a movie or appearance or something, that her verbal abuse to her own mother would increase. So it's possible that Amber Heard as a child was being abused by maybe the father or someone else, and the mother didn't do anything, which happens, right? Parents will sometimes not know what happened, or they'll look the other way, or they won't know what to do, or they're being abused also by that individual, or the parent themselves went through sexual abuse when they were growing up and have a hard time gauging what is abuse and what isn't because they were shown a very distorted view of what is okay to do to children. It's just another tragic part of the abuse. Or the parent who is enabling it or ignoring it might also be psychopathic and they don't care about other people's feelings. So it's an experience that a lot of people will have. I'm sure some of you have had that experience where you're very resentful of one of your parents for not helping you. In fact, what I will find is that, not always, is that say the father was being abusive and the mother was not doing anything about it. What I'll find is that the abuse victim, as they grow up, there will be different phases where they will hate the father and sort of be sympathetic to the mother. And then later on, they'll be like, well, yeah, my father was a complete train wreck, but my mother wasn't, and she knew better and she didn't do anything. So I hold my mother more responsible for all the stuff that happened because she just stood by and did nothing. So I don't know if we're looking at a situation like that. Of course, I have no idea, but that would be an hypothesis I would explore.
Yeah, it was just so random and ongoing. You would never know when it was going to come left of center. I do remember on one occasion when we were moving from part-time to full-time and then the salary negotiations became a real bone of contention. And I specifically remember standing in her office where she leapt up out of her chair, put her face approximately 4 inches from my face. She was spitting in my face and telling me how dare I ask for the salary I was asking for, which was in fact approximately half of my regular annual salary.
Wow. I mean, if that's true, yikes. She's saying that she was trying to negotiate a salary. She was moving from part-time to full-time, and she suggested a salary that seemed fair. According to her, Amber Heard leapt out of her chair, got 4 inches from her face, was screaming at her, spitting in her face, and telling her how dare she do that. We don't know, but for borderline individuals, not everyone, of course, I want to acknowledge that some of you probably identify as someone who has borderline, and you would never do something like that. Most of the clients that I treat, I don't think would do something. It's a particular kind of borderline and a particular severity of it. Also, it's possible, you know, if someone ever does that to you, it's also possible that they don't have borderline and it's just some other problem that they suffer from. But the way I would explore that, if someone with borderline did tell me that they did that to someone, the hypothesis I would have is that when you are negotiating for salary, the borderline, so this is something that I should probably mention, that some of your coworkers might be suffering from borderline, and the way in which it plays out at work can be quite different. And this is an example of that, right? So Ms. James is saying, I want to get this much. And you could imagine someone being told that it feels like, wow, I don't have that amount of money, or that's not what I'm comfortable paying, which means that I'm going to have to say, no, I can't pay that, which means that they're going to leave me. Because you could imagine that for Amber, she maybe became quite attached to her personal assistant. It wouldn't be unusual for someone with borderline to be very susceptible to blurred boundaries along those lines. And a personal assistant can sometimes be a best friend. So when your friend, someone that you're really trying to love you and be there for you, and they shoot really high and you're thinking, oh crap, I can't pay that, which means I'm going to have to say no, which means they're going to leave me. You know, that I've been talking about this before, that for people with borderline, they will see abandonment and betrayal where it doesn't exist. Negotiating a high salary can feel kind of like a betrayal. Like, so you're just using me for money? Or, you know, you can see someone thinking that. Of course, that's not rational. It's just a discussion of salary, especially if it was the going rate, for example. I mean, she says she got paid $50,000 a year to be at her beck and call 24/7 essentially, and then endure being verbally abused at 3 a.m. on a regular basis. Like, that's not enough money for that, particularly if you're living in LA, you know, the standard of living is pretty high. So you could imagine that it feels like a betrayal, or it feels like the precursor to an abandonment, or it even could feel abandoning, like you're just using me. You don't really like me. I thought we were friends, and now you are demanding all this money. And then within a half of a second, all that is processed cognitively and massively distorted, and this pain, this wound is just poked at hard, and then the anger kicks in, and you feel hurt and angry and righteous, and you don't necessarily know where it's coming from, so you just invent a justification for the way that you feel, which is you're a piece of crap for asking that. And if you're the recipient of that, you're like, wait, what just happened? I just gave you the going rate and I'm being screamed at as if I'm a piece of crap and I'm greedy. Like, so from the outside, it'll look very weird, because on the inside, there's like 100 steps that the person goes through in half of a second. And you might work with people like this, where you're thinking, where did that come from? And I'll tell you, once I figured this out early in my career, it explained a lot of behavior at my workplace. I was like, oh, whatever that was that felt very odd, I'm guessing there was some trauma that was triggered, and then that happened. It didn't justify it, but it helped me because it felt less personal, right? It felt like, well, that wasn't my, because it'd be, you know, especially when you're inexperienced and you just feel like, okay, it was my fault. I am a piece of crap for asking for that salary, you know? So anyway, I don't know if that's the explanation, but she's saying this story of being berated just in a calm discussion about salary and getting in her face. Wow.
I was offering her that as a favor, and she felt that gave her the right to spit in my face. And there was a witness in the apartment at that time, by the way.
Who was at the apartment at the time?
The handyman, Hector Galindo.
I'm sorry?
The handyman, Hector Galindo. He was so mortified. He was so embarrassed to hear her speaking to me like that.
If all this is even remotely true, to be Amber Heard in this moment has just got to be rough. If she does suffer from what Dr. Curry says she suffers from, this is going to be hard. Now, there's another possibility that she just distorts this whole thing, that everyone is crazy, because when you lack insight with borderline and histrionic, you think everyone else is the problem and not yourself. However, deep down, you know it's your problem, but you're in a constant state of denying that because you're so afraid of the implication of that, most notably that you're worthless and no one will ever love you. But if any of this is true, I cannot imagine what she's going through emotionally. She seems cool as a cucumber, but I don't know. I worry about her, honestly. Like, if she does have significant borderline and histrionic, I would actually be significantly worried about her harming herself in some way. If you just told me this case, you know, I have someone, early childhood trauma, borderline, histrionic, and they have to sit in court while other people review all of the horrible things that you've done, I would immediately say, like, do they have to be there? Can they take breaks, or can their therapist be right there with them? Or is there something that can be done? Because that's too much for these individuals to handle.
Did Ms. Heard ever tell you that she had ingested illegal drugs?
Yes.
When did Ms. Heard tell you that she had ingested illegal drugs?
Sporadically here and there.
I will say, the fact that this is a public hearing is pretty awful for Amber Heard in particular. Who knows how Johnny Depp will look by the end of this, but at the beginning anyway, it's looking very bad for Amber Heard. And I heard, and I don't know the truthfulness of this, but Amber Heard was trying to get this trial to, you know, she didn't want to have this trial. This is all Johnny Depp's doing. You know, Amber Heard wrote that article, and Johnny Depp is now bringing her into court for defamation. And according to the report, Amber Heard didn't want this to be a public hearing. She wanted it, you know, no cameras, that kind of thing. But Johnny Depp and his team made sure that it was public and got it to be public. I would speculate because Johnny Depp believes that his public image is at stake. And that is, I think, the stated factor as to why he is even having this suit. That, and he wants people to hear the truth and believes that he'll come out looking better in the end, or Amber Heard will come off looking worse in the end. And I have to say, because all this is not Amber Heard's doing. She did not want to go to court, yet all of her dirt is now being publicized. Every single possible thing that Johnny Depp's team can drudge up about her that, you know, even remotely relates to the case can be publicly stated. Yeah, it's pretty awful. If someone would have been there with Amber Heard as she was about to publish that article and said, so, you know, there's a chance that Johnny Depp will sue you, and there's a chance that this will be in court, and there's a chance that even if you win the suit, that he could just drag you through the mud and bring all these past people on the stand that will talk bad about you, and it could just ruin your career. Is that what you want to do? But even as I say that, of course, if it was true that he was abusive, this is the whole Me Too movement. The whole purpose of this is we want to strike back at all of the systemic elements that keep victims down, particularly women victims, but, you know, all victims. And using the court, because this will happen, people will say, if you tell people that I'm abusing you, I will drag you through the courts. I've got millions upon millions of dollars. I've got lawyers. I will destroy you. And that intimidation will keep people quiet. This happens all the time. Harvey Weinstein, for example. So as I say that out loud, it's a tough position to be in. If Amber Heard was abused, if she lied about it, then does she deserve this? I just, I don't know. I wish there was another way to get justice that didn't involve a public humiliation. But of course, we want the justice system to be non-corrupt. And sometimes that means you have to make it public so that the press and others can scrutinize it. So I don't know. I'm just sad for everyone, honestly.
What drugs did Ms. Heard tell you she had ingested?
Mushrooms, ecstasy, and cocaine.
Barry, I don't know what that means, but she told the personal assistant that she had taken mushrooms, cocaine, and ecstasy. All right.
Why did it appear to you that Ms. Heard was under the influence of illegal drugs?
Disoriented, partying with friends, lots of heavy drinking, laughing, dancing, playing, all the sorts of things that go hand in hand with imbibing.
All right, so her evidence to her at the time that Amber Heard was using illegal drugs was what she just said, which I have to say isn't strong evidence, or I'm not convinced by that. You can certainly be sober and do a lot of those things.
Would Ms. Heard's treatment of you change when she was intoxicated?
Yes.
How so?
She became more and more belligerent and abusive.
All right. I think this is relevant to the events later on between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. According to her, she's saying as she got more intoxicated, she became more belligerent. Our ability to regulate our emotions and plan behavior and understand consequences becomes greatly diminished when we're intoxicated on alcohol. So it's hard once the anger kicks in and once the impulse to yell at someone or even be violent with someone kicks in, it's hard to check in with that, say, is this a good idea? When you're sober, you're more able to do that. And when you're intoxicated, it's nearly impossible for some people to think straight along those lines.
Did you observe Ms. Heard showing what appeared to be injuries to any of her friends at the chateau that day?
No.
They were at some sort of chateau, and I think Amber Heard may have made an allegation that Johnny Depp had physically assaulted her there. And according to the personal assistant, Amber Heard called her and said, there's an emergency. Personal assistant arrives, and then she sees there's a bunch of other friends around. Now, of course, if Amber Heard had actually been assaulted, then that would make sense that she would call a personal assistant and anyone else she can get to her side, but she is saying that there were no signs of abuse. I heard no discussion of the abuse. Also, it seemed conspiratorial. So not only did I not see any signs of abuse, and not only, and she said earlier, I don't believe she was ever abused by Johnny Depp, but it also seemed like they were planning something. So, wow. But it's hard to imagine how you would know that without any, you know, she, why do you think there was a conspiracy going on? And she just says a few details that don't seem very convincing. So I don't know. Does that illuminate bias on her part? I don't know.
Spending the entire afternoon hanging around together.
Did you ever learn information that made you believe that one of the reasons that their relationship between Johnny and Amber wasn't, as you described, perfect was because of Johnny's substance abuse?
I couldn't speculate on the details of their personal relationship.
All right, well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself, because you deserve it. You really, really do.